Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop, Shimmy Shimmy Rock, Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop, Shimmy Shimmy Rock. The year is 1998, and our rewatch is Big, starring Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins.
20th Century Fox presents Tom Hanks. Big.
I turned into a grown-up, Mom. I made this wish on a machine, and it turned me into a grown-up.
So now what?
You get a job.
Cannot get a job. I play with all of this stuff, and then I tell them what I think.
Can they pay you for that? Sucker!
Vice President, he's only been here a week.
See that girl over there in the red? Short upper legs, Randy, so tight, you'll be begging for mercy.
Well, I'll stay away from her then.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rewatch. This is Mike, and I am talking about the 1998 Penny Marshall film, Big. This thing was kind of a cultural monster at the time, but I can't even tell you when the last time I saw this movie was. Probably sometime on cable 20 years ago. I don't know. I didn't even remember most of it. Let's just jump in and get right to the elephant in the room. Yeah, this movie in 2023 is a little bit problematic. It's got a little bit of an issue with 13-year-old Josh Baskin and 32-year-old Susan Lawrence hooking up. Just put it out of your mind for now. It was the 80s. It was a different time. So I was interested to know, and I didn't know this, that this film was based on an Italian film called De Grande, which basically has the same story. Screenwriters Ann Spielberg and Gary Ross had seen it, and they liked it, and they decided to basically completely rip off the idea. Ann Spielberg is Steven Spielberg's sister. So they wrote the script. Apparently, they wrote it in like an hour, or they wrote the basic story in like an hour. You know, obviously, it takes months to write a script. But they wrote the basic story in an hour, sold it almost immediately to Fox. And this thing went around for a little bit, not very long, a couple of months, a couple of weeks, I don't know, it kicked around. Initially, Steven Spielberg was in the works to direct this film. I guess his sister connected to him. His initial idea was that he was going to have Harrison Ford play the older Josh. For whatever reason, that didn't work out. A variety of people were either auditioned or considered or offered this role, including Kevin Costner, Dennis Quaid, Steve Guttenberg, who was huge back in the 80s. He seemed like he was in every movie. Matthew Modine, Albert Brooks, Jeff Bridges. John Travolta apparently really wanted to do this, but at the time, this was pre-Pulp Fiction. John Travolta was really on the downward portion of his career, at least, you know, the portion of that career. He had a definite resurgence after this, but nobody was willing to take a gamble on him headlining a movie like this. Sean Penn was in the running for this, but they thought that he was too young. Andy Garcia was in the running for this. Apparently, he was pretty close, but then some studio executive decided they weren't going to spend $20 million on a movie to have the kid grow up to be a Puerto Rican, which is not only racist, it's stupid, because Andy Garcia is Cuban. At one point, they were trying to pitch a gender swap on this, or going the other way with this, and Deborah Winger was in the running, and then somebody realized that having a 13-year-old girl in a relationship with a mid-30s executive was way, way more problematic than the other way around, I guess. And that, yeah, that kind of makes sense. So here they are, and they they wound up with Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins. And at one point, Robert De Niro was in the running to play the McMillan role, which eventually went to Robert Loggia. And then here we have our cast. And obviously, young David Moscow as the younger Josh. So Hanks, you know, this is the second Hanks movie in a row, and I'm cool with that. You know, we talked last time about this run that Tom Hanks went on in the 90s. And so listen to the Catch Me If You Can episode where we discuss that, because he had this incredible run of films going on through the 90s. I mean, just hit after hit after hit after hit. But at that point, he is, you know, really considered to be a serious actor. Tom Hanks in the 80s was a very, very different thing. The films that he was doing was a lot of comedy. You know, he had come out of a comedy background and a sitcom on TV, Bosom Buddies, which was a huge, huge hit. And he went into, you know, I guess his big break was probably Splash in 1984, the Ron Howard film about the mermaid, Daryl Hannah. But he also, in 84, he had a film called Bachelor Party, which I'm going to tell you was a seminal film for guys my age. Once Bachelor Party came out on VHS, I must have watched that thing a dozen times. It was such a fun film that would never get made today. If you've never seen it, maybe check it out. Tom Hanks, Tony Katane, Adrian Zmed, a bunch of other people you never heard of. If we ever land on 1984, that may be a contender, because I don't think I've seen that movie since college. But anyway, so he does that the same year as he does Splash. Did a couple films in 85, Volunteers, One Red Shoe, Money Pit, and a couple of others. 87, he hits Dragnet, and I love Dragnet. Him, Dan Aykroyd, his character of Pep Strebeck, I think, was peak Tom Hanks comedy in those times. And then he comes in and he does this, and this movie is kind of, this is kind of the bridge between his, like, serious acting career and that early comedy career, because this is a funny movie, but also he gives such an amazing performance in this movie. I mean, he's really incredible as this, you know, 30-year-old guy trying to portray how a 12 or 13-year-old would act. He just does this incredible job. It's a physical performance. It's an emotional performance. It's a face performance. It's a voice performance. He just rolls everything up into this, and it's really, really an incredible job that he did. From what I've read, he would do these scenes, and he would have David Moscow, who played young Josh, come in and do the scenes with Elizabeth Perkins or Robert Loggia, and he would watch how he did them, how the younger actor did them, what he did with his hands, what his facial expressions were, how he approached the dialogue and how he approached the connection. And then he would step in and he would use David Moscow's performance as a template to go in and do the scene for himself. And you could tell that he really is modeling what, you know, a younger mind would be doing in the distraction or the nervousness or deciding all of a sudden, oh, we're going to go do the next thing, having his mind wander, being uncomfortable in certain areas. I mean, one of my favorite scenes is when he's, you know, in the meeting and John Hurt's character, Paul, is presenting this new toy, which is a building that turns into a robot. And Josh is just like, I don't get it.
What?
What don't you get, Josh?
Well, there's a million robots that turn into something. And this is a building that turned into a robot. What's fun about playing with a building? That's not any fun.
This is a skyscraper.
Well, couldn't it be like a robot that turns into something like a bug or something?
A bug?
Yeah. Like a big prehistoric insect with maybe like giant claws that could pick up a car and crush it like that.
A prehistoric transformer?
Interesting.
Gentlemen,
so the robot turns into a bug.
Gentlemen,
you
listen,
listen
if you
to
would
him.
Just
got a very good idea here. The robot turns into a bug.
This is a great idea.
Some
sort of
water bug,
different sizes and things. And
Susan, we could do ladybug.
You could have him wreck buildings.
Transformers for girls.
It's an urgent bug.
Yeah. All kinds of possibilities.
This doesn't just happen. This guy just doesn't happen. He doesn't just come to a meeting and say bug.
You know, as a 13-year-old, he's not going to probably beat around the bush and be like, well, it's a good idea, you know, try to spare any feelings. He's just like, I don't get it. What's fun about a building? And he just starts freewheeling and spitballing and, oh, what if it was a bug? What if it was a bug that turned into a robot? And then everybody in the room is like grabbing that idea. You know, McMillan's like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And the other guy's like, so the bug turns into a robot. And Paul is just like, what is this? No, bug, no. Why are we, how does this happen? This doesn't happen. It's just such a great scene. It's so organic. It's so funny. And watching how all these other actors react to it, and they just completely dismiss Paul, and now they're having a separate conversation. It just really shows how Hanks is just trying to encapsulate the mind of a teenager, of a 13-year-old in this world. I think another great example of this is, it's a little bit of a darker scene, but it's the scene where he's in the hotel room for the first time and Billy leaves him, and, you know, the stuff going on outside, and you could just tell that Josh is scared and he's getting more and more scared by the minute. And again, that's just, you know, Tom Hanks bringing another facet to life of how would a child of this age react to the situation that's going on. There's obviously the scenes with Elizabeth Perkins. I think these two are really great together. And I've wondered, like, what really ever happened to Elizabeth Perkins? I'm not sure that she had the career that she should have had. I mean, she's had a good career. She's been in a bunch of films, did a lot of TV, had a really great run on Weeds. I first saw her in what was her first film, About Last Night, I think 86 or so. Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, her, Jim Belushi. She was great in it. Played a completely different character than Susan. She played like the witty, acerbic roommate. She was fantastic in it. But she never really took off and had this, you know, superstar career. But she is a great, solid actress. She's great in this film. And, you know, she's obviously still working. She was just Aunt May in Across the Spider-Verse. So, you know, she's still around, but I don't know, man. I just wondered why her career wasn't bigger than it was. I guess there were probably other actresses in that space. So, yeah, let's talk about this whole Susan and Josh thing. You know, it's probably something that in the 80s when this movie came out, I didn't even think we really thought about it all that much. Because you're looking on screen and you're seeing, you know, Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins, and that seems cool, and that's totally appropriate. But, you know, when you realize that, this is a 13-year-old boy, newly minted 13-year-old boy, because we celebrate his birthday in this film, that they're having this, you know, sexual relationship, that's a little weird. And then, especially at the end of the film, when she realizes that he's telling her the truth, and he's not, you know, not trying to get out of the relationship because he's emotionally immature, that he's legitimately a 13-year-old boy trapped in a man's body. And she's like, okay, I'll drive you home. But she gives him like this little neck rub and is like, yay, look me up in 10 years. I mean, you know, in retrospect, that's kind of a weird moment, I guess. You know, 25 years on, it doesn't age very well. And I can't imagine this film being made today, this story being made today, because it's just, obviously, it's, you know, on one hand, we're like, hey, you know, people should be able to do what they want to do. But on the other hand, it's, you know, this whole idea of children being in these relationships is obviously a problem. And we see all these teacher-student relationships and things going on and those all blown up. So, yeah, this would be a difficult pitch in 2023. So we definitely got to talk about, you know, probably the marquee scene in the movie, which is the piano scene in F.A.O. Schwartz. So, you know, if you don't remember or weren't in an area near New York City, the F.A.O. Schwartz store on Fifth Avenue was kind of a toy mecca. I mean, it was like the ultimate expression of a toy store. It's closed, you know, obviously it's closed now. I think it had closed in the early 2000s when the company went into bankruptcy, reopened again in like 2004, and then it finally closed permanently in 2015. But this was a place, I mean, this was a tourist attraction, especially after this movie and Home Alone 2. This is a huge tourist attraction. People go there with no intention of buying anything, just to see the place. But it was really like this. It was just this huge multi-level toy store that, especially around Christmas time, was just completely done up. And people would just go there and spend hours in there just wandering around, looking at all the stuff in there. All the interactive displays, all the toys that were available to touch and hold and play with. And this piano, apparently this was a thing, not that big. It was smaller. And then they built one that was this huge piano that these two guys could do. And apparently Hanks and Loggia practiced for a long time to do this. Loggia, even though he was older, was in really great shape. Hanks had said that, you know, Robert Loggia played tennis every day, and he was in better shape than Hanks was, and he found himself like really huffing and puffing to keep up with Robert Loggia in filming the scene. They had doubles, they had stunt doubles who were on the side and ready to go. They practiced on, they had cardboard mock-ups that they would practice on, but these two guys, they went in there and they did it. So what you're seeing is actually them doing it, and it's such a great scene.
Piano lessons?
3 years.
Me too. Every day after school.
Kind of becomes the centerpiece and the marquee scene of the movie. You know, it's the scene that everybody remembers. It's on the cover of the box of the DVD. If anybody's going to talk about big, they always bring up the scene, or they always show the scene, because it was really kind of the one thing that everybody remembered, and everybody wanted one of those roll-up, you know, floor pianos. They were selling, I worked at a mall that had an F.A.O. Schwartz in it, and they had one of those floor pianos, and it was for a while, and it was, everybody wanted this thing. Everybody wanted to play with them. You probably still buy them somewhere. So, how did this film wind up doing? Well, it wound up doing pretty good. It had a budget of $18 million. It made $158 million, which, you know, 10 times your budget by anybody's stretch of the imagination is pretty fantastic. It's holding a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Got some really good reviews. Our guy Roger Ebert gave the film a good review. He said it's a tender, soft-hearted, cheerful movie, well-directed by Penny Marshall, and with a script by Annie Spielberg and Gary Ross that has a lot of fun with simple verbal misunderstandings. Gene Siskel liked the film as well. He said Tom Hanks proves to be an adept comedian here, and he said the film is best when its romance blooms at a toy company, where Elizabeth Perkins is an executive and Hanks has become a star vice president with his innocent approach to picking best-selling toys. I don't know, Gene. I don't know if that reviews age very well. New York Times liked it. Everybody gave this film a pretty good review. It won the Golden Globe for Best Film in a Comedy or Musical. Tom Hanks got a Best Actor nomination for this film. It got a screenplay, Best Adapted Screenplay nomination. So it did really well, and it really kind of hit the zeitgeist. You know, I said that piano thing became a big hit. The Zoltar Speaks, they actually built these things and started putting them in fairs and amusement parks, and you can still find those things around once in a while. So yeah, that's big. I definitely, if you haven't seen this movie, or you haven't seen this movie in a long time, I definitely recommend going to see it. Or looking it up online, I found it. It was just on TV, on my YouTube TV. It was just available to watch. I think it was on one of the channels. So it's a great movie. Look it up. Watch it. See some early Tom Hanks really killing it. And so we're going to be doing something a little unusual for the next episode. This is the end of the year. 1978 is rolling off, and we're going to be rolling 2004 on. So we are going to do a film from 1978 to close out the year. So I will pick a film out, and we'll see you the next time.